Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 94. We are discussing the Porsche European Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have Golf Betting System's European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be back, isn't it?
Do a bit of
golf coverage after a week of R&R.
I said on the golf betting show that I recorded yesterday, you were in the Mediterranean, I was in Skegness. Something's going horribly wrong somewhere.
Yeah, although from looking at the weather forecast I saw while I was out there, Steve, I think it was hotter where you were than where I was, to be honest.
Yeah, we did. We approached 30 degrees in Lincolnshire. Mm. That's unheard of, mate.
Yeah, believe me. Factor 50 city.
It was, yes. It certainly was. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website, naturally available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. I've got to thank the listeners. We crashed through 5,000 group members. Mm. So thank you one and all that came to the group. I noticed quite a few UK, quite a few Ireland, and a mix also of Americans joining. So welcome to all of you. Paul is available on Twitter at GolfBetting. I'm available at Bamford Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. I put a link to this week's Porsche European Open show in the description box. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, Buzzsprout, YouTube, and it's now been added to Google Podcasts. So if that's how you take on board your podcast, welcome. Available on Google now. Now we are asking for two simple things from you guys. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. That is the podcast currency and drives our listener numbers continually upwards. Secondly, if you are in the growing band of YouTube listeners, please subscribe and like the show. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Leave your name in the review so we can read it out on the podcast. Now, we haven't got any reviews to read this week, so if you are listening and you want to give us a review, it would be much appreciated and we will read it out next week. On the KLM Open and also the returning PGA Tour Greenbrier Classic show. Right, Paul. Mm. Let's have a little chat about what we've kind of missed. I'm not really going to talk about the week before last, the Tour Championship, and also I'm trying to go back to what you were... Oh, it wasn't the Czech Masters that week, was it?
No, the Scandinavian invitation, the one
yes.
in Sweden, Gothenburg, yes.
Eric, yeah. I said I wasn't going to talk about it, but the only thing that comes out of that was EVR's first European Tour victory.
Yeah, after everyone, including me, had said that he was unbackable at the price, wasn't he? Was he 14, 16 to 1? And you know, every punter who's been on him over the last few months and, well, yeah, probably months rather than years, but you know, we all knew that he's quite capable of winning. We'd all watched him, we'd all seen him not convert fantastic chances, and it's enough to put you off. And then you sit back, and he has the Sunday that has been lacking and missing for a while, and wins a tournament, and he wins it with some style as well. So, yeah, congratulations to him. I mean, to hold his nerve and to make the putt on the last hole to get over the line was cracking stuff. And can only applaud him, really. The last podcast we had, when he wins at that kind of price, I will miss him because I won't back him at that price. And lo and behold, he went off and won straight away after I made that statement. But
won it with the putter.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was minus two strokes gained approach. And his putter was just an incredible number. 13.5 strokes across the tournament gained with a putter, which ranked number two for the week. So 15th for tee to green and second with a putter. Mm. And when that putter was working, he's a hard man to keep down, isn't he?
Yeah, really. He is. It'd be interesting to see how he pushes on from here. You know, his reaction on Twitter was, you know, this is just the start, and You often see with these kind of players that once they get over that physical and or that mental barrier and break through them, they can push on from strength to strength. And in fact, he was in the mix for parts of it last week as well, wasn't he? So, you know, there's a case to be had to keep an eye on him. He's just going to be a silly short price for a period of time. So it depends how you like to... how you like to take a punt on these players, whether you wait until they drift out a little bit or whether you're happy to take a 14 or 16 to one about a guy who's just got that monkey off his back.
In your opinion, on the basis that you've watched him for a couple of years on the European Tour, do you see him as being the next elite player from South Africa? You know, following on from Grace, Svartzel, Oosthuizen. Do you think he's got a bit more about him than, you know, the likes of a Brandon Stone and guys like that that have been mooted as being the next best thing from South Africa?
I think how he reacts over the next 3-6 months will tell us that. It's difficult because he is clearly a very talented player, and clearly up until that point he had struggled with that final element.
Top 10 in a major this year as well.
Yeah. He was clear. You know, going back to the Open last year, where he was in decent spot for a long stretch of it, wasn't he? And it's all part of the learning process. And he has, you know, learnt enough now to push himself onto that next level. If he kind of sits back and just dines out on it for the rest of the year and doesn't push on, then it'll be a shame for him, I think. I don't know. It's a difficult answer. I don't put him in that same bracket as a Brandon Grace. No. Not right now, but we'll see how he progresses. And don't know. It's the simple answer. We shall see.
Also got President's Cup picks to play for, haven't they? Yeah. Guys of that kind of ilk.
Yeah, it's not as if they can down tools now for the rest of the year. There's lots to play for. You know, the guys that are on the cusp of a top 50 OWGR ranking for year end need to keep their foot down. And you know, there's lots of, I mean, particularly with the European Tour schedule, there's lots to play for, isn't there? There's a lot of decent events.
A lot of OWGR points on some very top-heavy events coming up on the European Tour.
Yeah, exactly. We've got 10 weeks or so of pretty strong action building, you know, as we go through next week and then into Wentworth the week after. And then you've got all of the Rolex Series events to finish off the year as well. So lots to play for.
We mentioned EVR. It'd be remiss of us now not to mention Rory winning the Tour Championship. His second PGA, or his second FedEx Cup championship, if you like. A cool $15 million pocketed for the bonus prize alone. He then flew across. I think I tweeted out. Is it? It's something crazy now for McIlroy. He's by far the most successful European Tour player now to have played on the PGA Tour. Mm. And you have to respect that. People have a dig and, oh, he can't win majors and whatever. You know, he's won now 16 PGA Tour titles. That's an incredible number.
Yeah, it's not to be sniffed at, is it? And as you say, you know, he's stuck to his word. He'd already committed to the European Masters because of Omega. He's one of his sponsors and flew straight out there and got himself again into the position to win last week, didn't he? Made the playoff with a strong back nine, five-man playoff. But, you know, if you're backing someone like Rory at 4-1 before the event, you really need him to be dominating that kind of event rather than scraping himself into a playoff, which eventually he lost. So the perils of backing short price players. In golf betting.
From the numbers I saw this morning, capturing the numbers from the tournament, it looked like it was actually his scrambling that let him down. He was like 30% for scrambling. So if he'd have actually scrambled anywhere close to where he's good at, you know, he'd have walked that tournament.
Yeah, it could be a tricky track that because of the way that the greens are structured.
Yeah. The other thing with those scrambling numbers is if you're constantly short-siding yourself because strategically you're going at it too much, you know, not really respecting the course enough, You're putting yourself in positions where it's almost impossible to scramble. And it's a tough track for scrambling. You can just see that in the numbers.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, a lot of the the greens are, you know, like upturned saucers effectively, so there's runoff areas and it's not straightforward. And you can attack it, you know, as I remember saying in my preview last week, you can attack it a number of ways. You can play it conservatively or you can play aggressive, and you know, both styles have a way to get to the winning score. But it certainly created a lot of excitement, and you know, fantastic for Sebastian Soderberg to make the putt to put the pressure on Rory and win his first title. 275-1.
Two questions for you. When was the last time you saw a five-man playoff?
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it?
I'll leave the second question till we've answered this one. I was sitting there. I watched a little bit of it on Sunday, and I couldn't remember the last time we had a... I mean, I went back to say that there was a Honda Classic about 5-6 years ago, which actually I think McIlroy was part of, where there was a 4 or 5 in it. I can remember him and Russell Knox, Palmer, players like that. I can't think of any others.
I remember there was a long playoff at the Spanish Open that Rafael Jacquelin won a few years back. I think that started off with quite a few players as well. There was another one, Glenn Eagles, I think, Thomas Bjorn. I mean, you were talking a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing kind of last year or the year before, is there?
No. But it's good, you know, it adds a lot of excitement, doesn't it? And it's, you know, to get for the guys that had backed Soderberg. And again, you know, some of the things I was looking for last week, one of them, and I'd said in the preview that I think it was 7 out of the previous 9 had finished in the top 6 or 8 in their previous event. So he had that coming into it. He was just a debutant going into that event. And historically, you've needed to have had a good look at Kranz to get your head around it. It's not one of those tracks you can tend to just rock up to and get your head around first time. But you know, that back nine with birdies being made by a lot of players, and you know, ultimately got himself into a position to win and made the putt when he needed to make the putt. That's the game of golf.
Second question, what is Soderberg's background? Because he's a relatively new name for me. That might also be the case for some of our listeners. Clearly, a European challenge or European, a second division background over recent years.
Yeah.
Is he a player that's ever poked out on your radar, potentially?
Well,
or just a name in a list?
Yeah, you can look at some of the players and some of these types, and you know, they'll pop up for various reasons, but I've never backed him. There's not a player that I've backed in the past. And you know, until you've really sat down and investigated a player and got to
and
grips
watched
with
him. Yeah,
they're difficult to pigeonhole. I mean, most of his good work's been on the challenge tours. You know, a couple of wins back there, and I think it was one in the Nordic Golf League going back as well. But yeah, on the European tour, and hence the price. You know, he'd come into the event having finished 5th the week before, and he was still available at 275-1. I mean, the bookies saw that as a flash in the pan, and you know, with no course history, he was difficult to justify. But then I've seen a number of winning betting slips. You know, the guys have taken a chance on him purely on the back of the performance the week before and picked up a chunky number. So yeah, well done to you guys if you managed to get a bit of Soderberg last week.
If you're a long shot back at the backer, players like that top 5 the week before available at 200-1 plus, they're kind of no-brainer bets, aren't they?
Yeah, you could, I mean, again, you could have gone through and, you know, using the logic that was in the preview, you could have said, OK, well, I'm going to back all, whatever the number was, 10, 15 players who have you know, the right finish in their previous event. It doesn't need to be necessarily the week before, but from the last week or two, and that was their last start. And for all the guys that were sitting there at 150, 200, 200 to 1, 250, whatever the number, and backed them all, you know, you'd have popped up with a winner there because you'd have slotted Soderberg in as part of your portfolio long shots, but it's never that straightforward usually.
We also had yesterday the conclusion of the Korn Ferry Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. And one of our local brethren from Welwyn Garden City in Hertfordshire, just north of London, Tom Lewis, flew over played his first ever Korn Ferry Tour tournament and won by 5 shots at 23 under to bag himself a full PGA Tour card for next season, which clearly starts next week at the Greenbrier Classic.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
It is the way to do it, isn't it?
I mean, we'd seen a little bit from Lewis, hadn't we? Well, clearly, he'd stepped up a gear after having a few years in the doldrums. But 11th at the Open Championship was an eye-opener. I mean, you remember, I backed him the week, well, not the week, the start after that at the Czech Masters in Prague.
Yeah, he's awful.
He was diabolical. He ended up withdrawing halfway through his second round, I think it was, because he was an absolute mile off the pace. And did very little in Sweden the week after, and rocks up the Tour Championship on the Korn Ferry Tour and walks it. Fair play to him. Well, you know, it's very, very well done. And it's, for a career-defining win, that's going to be a big step for him. It gives him massive opportunity next year on the PGA Tour. Fascinating to see how he goes.
I keep saying Greenbrier Classic. It's a military tribute at the Greenbrier next week.
Yeah, so
apologies to people that like their T's crossed and their I's dotted. Yes. A question we were asking ourselves off mic pre-recording is, how do you categorise Tom Lewis? And clearly the strategy we've kind of come up with is bent grass greens or bent poa mix greens, and somewhere where you're looking at 20 under to win the tournament with a little bit of width off the tee.
A little bit of width, probably more exposed tracks rather than tree lines. I mean, you look at the two wins that he's got on the European Tour at the Villabora, the Portugal Masters, both of those wins. And, you know, that's the kind of track that clearly has suited his eye in the past, and as you say, he's managed to get himself into that kind of 20 under bracket. Bent grass greens, bit of width. He hits a lot of greens when he's playing well. He hits a lot of greens in regulation. You take him to a track that he gets on with the putting surfaces, and as you say, bent power makes sense. You know, he's a British lad. He's obviously played a lot of his or most of his formative golf on bent or bent power greens around the area, so that's going to feel more comfortable for him. That's for sure. But then he's got a bit of form in the Middle East as well. I mean, he's 7th last year the Tour Championship at the Earth Course, Saudi Abu Dhabi this year finished 9th. So yeah, he wouldn't want to completely just pigeonhole him as a kind of a one trick pony in that respect, but. He's going to have a lot of opportunities for different types of track, but tracks that are quite likely to suit, I expect, on the PGA Tour next season. Some of these big American-style tracks where unleash the driver and let his putter do the talking.
It'll be fascinating to see how him and his management team are going to work his schedule now, because clearly you've got somewhere like the International next week, the KLM Open. You've got Wentworth, which I'm sure he won't miss. You've got the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, which I'm sure he probably won't mix. You know, it's up $5 million up for grabs up there. Mm-hmm. You've then got Spanish Open, the Italian Open. You know, that's one of these. What do they call them now? These days on the calendar.
Oh, the Rolex Series.
Yeah, that's a Rolex Series event down in Italy. You then got the Portugal Masters, which clearly he would be defending. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So it's, you know, how many PGA Tour events does he play this autumn?
He's going to need to rejig it, isn't he? He's currently entered into, as you just said, he's currently entered into the KLM Open next week. So what's his decision from there? Does he instantly jump in and change his schedule, or is he kind of set now up until Christmas? We shall see.
Yeah, because there's rank. This is where it gets technical, isn't it? There's kind of rankings within rankings as well, isn't there? Because if he doesn't go out to America and play some tournaments and get some results, the likelihood he will slip down those kind of the rankings in terms of getting spots. Saying now, I think at this stage of the season, if he wants to go and play the Mayakoba Golf Classic or whatever, he's in the field. Because he actually, we were looking at this earlier, but because he now ranks, I think, in the top 5 in terms of the 50 that have qualified for the PGA Tour again.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, fifth. He's fifth out of the 50. So
yeah, he's sitting in fifth spot, isn't he? So he can play where he wants, effectively, this side of Christmas, in the States or on the PGA Tour. It'd be fascinating to see what he does there. I don't think he'll touch the HSBC World Championships. I don't think he's going to get into that. But there's an event in Bermuda. You've got this Zozo Championship. I think that's quite high-end because Tiger's going to be playing in now on the first PGA Tour event in Japan later on in October. The one that did look quite useful, I think, from a Tom Lewis perspective, would be somewhere like Houston early in October.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's pretty wide off the tee. But that, again, is the same week as the Italian Open. So he's got a lot of decisions on his plate, Tom Lewis. A lot of decisions. Talent that we've got being promoted this year. I think if you just look at the list coming onto the PGA Tour, Scottie Scheffler ranks as number one of the graduates that are coming up. He's a talented lad, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, he's one likely to break through, I think, relatively straightforward.
We've got Xinjun Zhang. He played a year last season, I believe. Didn't get a lot done, but clearly he was the number one point scorer across the regular season on the Corn Ferry. Matthew Neesmith, who did very well at the Boise Open to win that. There's some very talented individuals. Brandon Hagee, he was a name from a couple of years ago that was a big, long hitter and got some decent top five results on the PGA Tour. He's got himself a full card now.
Yeah.
And of course, we haven't even mentioned Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
Christopher Ventura. We've got a bit of a Scandinavian invasion.
Henrik Norlander.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few. Anibal Lahiri's got himself back on the tour as well. 21st spot. Yeah, it's a lot to look forward to. See, Justin Harding just missed out, which was a little bit disappointing for him in the end. He was virtually nailed on to make it, I think, at one point. But
Justin Harding finished 26th. DJ Trahan birded the last and managed to get into 24th spot. So Trahan's now got himself a full PGA Tour card for next year.
He's
an easy track bully, isn't he, Trahan?
Yeah, he's capable. But yeah, sorely disappointing for Harding. He was in a decent position after the first event, wasn't he?
Top seven.
Just drifted away after that.
Quite a few returning names. Fabian Gomez, mentioned him a few weeks ago. He performed second yesterday to jump into the top five in the playoff rankings. Brendan Todd's coming back. We've got Grayson Murray. I know that you always keep your eye out for Grayson Murray.
Yeah.
Tyler Duncan. David Hearn, the Canadian's back. Who else have we got? Cameron Percy, the Australian. He's back. So there's quite a few names that we've seen on the tour before. Joseph Bramlett. Doug Gimm's got himself a full PGA Tour card. DJ Trahan and Richie Rawinski. Rawinski's often one to watch on these sort of 20-under kind of tournaments. He pops up quite often.
Yeah, he's one of these birdie fest lovers, isn't he? Get him on the Bob Oak Classic next year.
And then there's a couple of players that have completely disappeared now. Ollie Schneiderjans being one. Completely lost his PGA Tour privileges. One of the worst drivers of the golf ball I've ever seen statistically, Ollie Schneiderjans, and that's the issue. Someone needs to straighten him up a little bit.
Yeah, get him out of the 32% driving accuracy stance.
That's a good week. Cody Gribble, he's gone. Wee Kim. Wee Kim won't have any status whatsoever, the South Korean, next year. So he's disappeared off the radar. So, yeah, a few changes to the PGA Tour. That action restarts next week at the Military Tribute at Greenbrier. And I had a quick glance. It's usual Bubba Watson, Phil Mickelson's playing, who have got properties. But also Bryson DeChambeau is playing in that one next week.
Okay.
In I'm trying to remember. Pennsylvania, I think it is. No, not Pennsylvania. Yeah. Where is it? I need to get it right. It is in Western Virginia. West Virginia. That's been a regular, isn't it, Greenbrier, for a number of years now. I can remember Angel Cabrera winning there. Xander Schauffele won his first PGA Tour event there a couple of years ago. And last year it was Kevin Na. So that's something to look forward to. Right. We've procrastinated enough. I'd go quiet now because effectively there's one tournament this week. It's the European Tour. Over to you.
Yeah, just the one. Yeah, it's a nice little stretch actually we've got coming up, isn't it, on the European Tour. So got the KLM. Actually, it's going to take a bit of deciphering next week, the KLM Open, because they're going to another new track, the International.
In Amsterdam.
Yeah, it's just by Amsterdam Airport. I've never been to Amsterdam, so I don't know how close that is to the action. But right next to the airport.
How close? About a 15-minute ride, mate, in a cab. I was there in March.
That will take. That looks an interesting one. A sub 7,000-yard par 73, apparently. So if that's how it actually manifests itself next week, that's going to be an interesting one to try and work out. But no, again, another decent field. Reed, Sergio, Tom Lewis, if he plays, playing next week. Joost Luiten, as you'd expect. Matt Wallace. And then we're on to Wentworth, and we were looking at the field earlier, which looks pretty good, doesn't it? McIlroy, Rose, Rahm, Francesco Molinari, Tony Finau coming over as well. Billy Horschel, another one of these American raiders, and a lot of the normal names that you'd expect to see at Wentworth as well, so... couple of big weeks to look forward to.
We're going to be on the course, so we're going to be sending out some tweets closer to the event, aren't we? Basically saying where we're going to be and at what time. So if listeners are there, they might want to meet up with us. And Barry's also attending, isn't he? Barry's coming over from Ireland for that.
Yeah.
So we'll be there on the Friday.
We'll be wandering around on the Friday from bar to bar. So if you can't see us on the course, then...
You forgot your mate Paul Casey. Patrick Reed's going to be playing. He's actually doing three straight, isn't he, Reed?
He is, yeah. Patrick Reed, Paul Casey, yeah. Shane Lowry's playing as well. Henrik Stenson, Paul Poulter. There's some really
it's
good
a great
names.
Field. I think that's the strongest Wentworth field I can remember.
Yeah, and I think it's been rewarded by its position in the calendar. And I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully the weather is... good enough for us all to enjoy it and have a good wander around the course. That's for those 4 days, for those of you who are going. This week first, though, and we're going back to the Green Eagle Golf Courses. So it's a collection of courses and holes in Hamburg. And this is the third year in succession that we've gone back to Green Eagle. The event's been restored back to its old autumn schedule spot. So the last couple of years where it's been played here at Green Eagle, it's been immediately after the Open Championship, and it's now been shifted back to the autumn, where it was when the event was reinstated in 2015. Just a note of caution, if you're looking at the old stats, 2015, 2016 were at different tracks. So 2017, 2018, last 2 years here at Green Eagle, but... they were played immediately after the Open Championship. So just worth bearing in mind, I guess. Decent field this week, actually. You've got four PGA Tour raiders who've come over. They head the betting, as you'd expect. Xander Schauffele, 13-2. Paul Casey, 7-1. Patrick Reed, 8-1. Matt Kuchar, 16-1. Thomas Peters, 16-1, who won recently. And then you're going into the more regular PGA or European Tour players after that, 28-1, bar those five. It does make for an interesting dynamic at the top of the market because you've got those three players, those three kind of 8-1 or sub 8-1 players, and then a couple of 16-1 shots. It does mean there's quite a bit of value further down the betting, and we'll go into it in a second. But given what we've seen here over the four renewals that we've had, for this event since it was resurrected, backing the short price favourites may not be the trick here this week.
I wonder how much money they played Xander to come across. So it's interesting. Xander isn't playing at Wentworth.
No,
but he's ranking quite. I think he's top 10 in the order of merit, isn't he? Or race to the bar.
He gets his major finishes, doesn't he? And they really bump it up.
But they've clearly paid him quite a few euro to come over.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure Matt Kuchar's not come over on a freebie either. So.
Do you reckon El Toucan's flown over from Mexico to be his to be his caddy?
Not unless he's got himself a new deal, no.
No.
Some details on the course. Green Eagle Golf Course is a collection of 42 holes in the Lüneburger Heide on the outskirts of Hamburg. They use the North Course here, so 18 of those 42 form the North Course, which can stretch up to 7,836 yards if they decide to play it off in the back tees. This year it's supposedly playing at 7,544 for a par of 72, so slightly down. It's about 30, 40 yards down on last year. One of the par fives has been reduced slightly, but it is still a nice long track. Wide fairways, large greens, but there is water on all but one of the holes. So it kind of sets up, for me, it sets up very much like a risk and reward track. There's five par fives, there's two short par fours, which ranked amongst the easiest holes over the last couple of years. But with five par fives, and clearly they can play about with the tee positions as well. So I wouldn't, yeah, you 7544 is what they're going to list the course as, but on some days, particularly on Saturday, I suspect they'll move a couple of the tee boxes up on the par fives and let the players have a real go at it. And for me, it's very much what you describe as a risk reward track, where you can have a go at some of these scoreable holes, but on some of the other tracks with a lot of water involved, you've got to be very, very careful. A couple of winners on this track since 2017. Jordan Smith, 13 under, in soft conditions that year. He averaged 296 yards off the tee. Richard McAvoy, last year, 11 under. He averaged 276 in dry conditions, so 20 yards shorter. And I think that tells a bit of a story. This track will play wider and longer when there's wet weather around, and clearly when there's dry weather, it will play a little bit narrower, and you know, it will be a little bit easier for the shorter hitters to navigate their way around this long track. Importantly, this year I'm seeing rain in the forecast pretty much every day up to the start of the event and during the course of the 4 days as well. It's not going to be particularly warm, mid 60s Fahrenheit. I suspect it's going to play and feel longer than it did last year by some stretch. And for me, it kind of feels far more akin to the conditions that we saw back in 2017 rather than last year. Winds 15 miles an hour or so, dropping as the event progresses. The weekend's not going to be too bad. It's just not going to be particularly hot. As I said, you've got this open dynamic from the last couple of years. Going back to the form that the guys who won on this track had coming in, McAvoy had won the week before in the alternate event on the Challenge Tour. So he came in and went win-win, effectively.
Wow.
Jordan Smith hadn't had a top 10 for 10 European Tour events prior to winning back in 2017, when he pipped Alex Levy, who I'd backed that week. So you've got a bit of a mix there in terms of the incoming form. I think really the conditions are going to dictate the kind of player that's going to be most suited for it. And for me, it's controlled aggression is probably the key. It is risk reward. It is going to be playing longer this year. It is going to be playing a little bit wider. I think you need a decent bit of punch off the tee this year. And be willing to attack the holes that are there to be attacked. Which leads me into one of my old favourites, and I suspect anyone who'd followed any of my previews in the past who'd seen the forecast would have said, well, Paul's going to stick Alex Levy up top, and that's exactly what I've done.
Did make me titter.
I think the fact that he's 40-1 this week, and there was a little bit of 50-1 very, very early on a Monday morning. So well done if you managed to grab that. And there's still 40-1 available now. I think the reason that he's that price is that you've got these players at the top of the market who, you have to decide whether you can or should oppose them or not. Alex Levy in Germany has got a fantastic record. He's got a decent record in this track. And if you look at the winning prices that we've had at the four events since this was resurrected, you had Tong Chai Jai Di 2015, he won at 55-1. Levy won at 45-1. Jordan Smith was 40-1. Looking for last year was 125-1. So these players who've gone in as short price, single figure, or, you know, 10, 12, 16 to one bracket, they haven't been winning this golf tournament.
Didn't DeChambeau, he was in the final group last year with McAvoy, wasn't he?
That's right, yeah.
And everyone, you know, he was kind of trading at 1.3 on Betfair, blah, blah, blah. And he just blew up, didn't he?
Yep. Awful round. And these things can happen, can't they? And for me, I think if there's enough of a valid reason to back players outside of those, you know, those short prices, then, you know, there's events where you simply can't avoid it, and you need to wade in on some of the short prices. But for me, I think Alex Levy stands a decent enough chance. And he had back issues early in the season, and his form dipped. We saw that. With a player like him, if he's got back issues, he's not swinging at full pelt. He needs to be able to go full beans.
Explode.
At these. And if he's not feeling 100% comfortable with his back, he's not going to be up to full speed. And, you know, he's missing cuts for fun, but he's starting to show some form now. I've seen his swing. It looks fluid. It looks good. 18th at the Czech Masters. He was 5th for total driving, 6th ball striking. That's the kind of numbers that I'm looking for with Levy to get involved in. Because that suggests to me that he's swinging back at his full pace and he's quite comfortable and happy in the way that he's playing. He was 5th the week after in Sweden. He opened with a 63 that week to lead after the... Or he was 2nd after the first
and
round.
And hypothetically, that course in Sweden isn't a Levy course.
No.
So no, for him to actually finish in the top 5 on a course that isn't his bag... Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh, well, he missed the cut last week, but, you know. He's never gonna compete around Kranz. It's not gonna happen.
This is his
kind of golf course, isn't it? Long, wide, risk and reward. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, with Kranz, he can
win on the European Tour, can't he? And he strings together top 5 finishes as regular as clockwork when he's at the top of his game.
When he feels comfortable and confident on the setup and the kind of track that he's on, and he's playing well, and I think ignore last week. I mean, for me, that he might as well have not played. And in fact, the fact that he's had an extra couple of days to prepare and get ready for this week is all good for me. I mean, it missed 5 of his last 7 cuts when it'd gone to the Swiss Alps, so I've got no issue with that whatsoever. You look at his German form. Third, 12th, 55th, 1st, 2nd, 13th from his 6 starts prior to missing the cut at the BMW International earlier this year when he was still struggling with his back. So very, very good in Germany, full stop. Second year in 2017, similar conditions. He had a very short putt to win. Very, very disappointing for backers that week. But, you know, he's got over it. He's won since. He won in Morocco. The year after to kind of get that out of his mind. I still think he's got demons to exercise this week. So if he can get into a position this week to do just that, then I think he's got a good chance of converting. 40-1 I thought was well worth taking on this week. A couple of mid-price players. Lucas Herbert, another player who's showing some form recently. He did a great 2018, didn't he, Herbert? He was one of the players that I backed quite a few times. 6 top 7 finishes.
And he was down at 20-1, wasn't he, for a big chunk of last year because he was playing so well.
Yeah.
18-1.
The bookies, I expected him to win. The bookies expected him to win. And 6 top 7 finishes, and he looked really, really strong. Started this year off 7th in Dubai, but been largely off the boil since that. I mean, until last week, 8th last week on his debut at Kranz. I mean, that stands out because, again, that's not his track by any stretch. You know, yes, you can get around it by attacking, but to go there on debut with that kind of game and to... I mean, he closed with a 64 as well. That's impressive stuff. That's a big tick in the book for me. He was 29th here last year on debut. Remember, that was in drier conditions. That was straight after his Open Championship debut. And he still shot a 67 on the Friday, 68 on the Sunday. Both of those rounds were amongst the very best that were on display in that particular week. He flanked those with a pair of 75s. That's why he finished down in 29th. But he's better than that. He's had a good sighting of the course. And I think the conditions this week will suit much better than they did 12 months ago. And we know from him, we've seen it, that he can and he does string results together. When he finds that bit of form, he finds some form with his long game, he can string results together. So 66-1 I grabbed yesterday, I think is well worth taking on Lucas Herbert, the Aussie. Paul Waring's another one I backed. I nearly backed Victor Dubuisson actually, and I gave it a long, hard thought as to whether to back Dubuisson. He's clearly finding something in his game. He's clearly starting to get his head around the game once again. He just still withdraws far too many times for me. It pulled out a couple of weeks ago with a neck injury, and his ball striking looked really good actually last week at Krasnodar. Yeah, but I had to scrub him off the list in the end. I just couldn't quite do it. Paul Waring, though, he has made the list. There's another one who's striking the ball well. Second for total drive and a first ball striker at the Czech Masters, where he finished 30th. He made a decent fist of his defence in Sweden on his last start, finished 20th. His ball striking was good again. His long game looked good again. Played alongside Erik van Rooyen that week for a couple of days. So perhaps a little bit of the winning mentality might rub off on him. You never know. He's certainly stepped up a gear since he won that Nordea Masters last year. Sixth in Abu Dhabi, third in Dubai, sixth at Hillside, seventh at La Hinge as well. If you look at his German form, he's not played this track. He's got four top 12 finishes in Germany from six starts overall. So clearly comfortable with the area, full stop. And I think in terms of a player who's got the power and the accuracy to compete around this track, then Paul Waring is one worth following at 80-1. Couple of longer shots then. Firstly, the talented Italian who is still being overpriced in my view. Guido Migliozzi, 100-1.
How do you say that?
Probably not how I've just pronounced it.
Guido. Well, no, it's better than mine. I think I came out with six different versions on the Golf Betting Show yesterday.
I'll just call him Guido. Guido.
Guido. Big. Call him Mini Mig.
Mini Mig.
Guido.
Yeah, so we're back in Mig at 100-1. He's followed the similar path to Matt Wallace, isn't he? He's gone through the Alps Tour, taken that to pieces. Three wins in the Alps Tour, and he's in 15 starts there. Come on to the European Tour, two wins on the European Tour, so already in 2019. So that makes five wins out of 56 starts as a professional, and that puts him in that same kind of bracket as Wallace when we were looking at him a year or so back. Where, you know, converting at circa 10% is absolutely, you know, it's outstanding. No matter what level you're playing at in golf, if you're converting 1 in 10 tournaments, then that's pretty good going. And for me, he's still overpriced. I mean, I can't offer you any course form or any, you know, sparkling German form, but 100-1, I thought was worth taking on. He's got the right kind of game for this track. And if you look at the way he's been kind of working towards each of his wins. But the number of events he's played between his wins, he played seven events, he won again. He played six events, he won again. He played seven events, he won again. He played five events, he won again. And he's now on a stretch of having played five events without a win. So, by the law of averages, from what he's done previously or recently, perhaps that win is just around the corner again this week. He's going to carry on that kind of sequence again for as he progresses his career. We shall see. But yeah, 100-1 I thought was worth taking on. And finally, Xander Lombard, 150-1. And is it one of these players that's erratic to back. When you back someone at 150-1 like Lombard, if he misses the cut, you kind of just take it on the chin. He can, and he does, get himself into positions where he can place or potentially get that win on the European Tour that I suspect he's well capable of doing. He's placed top seven times in the European Tour so far, one of which was here in soft conditions in 2017 on this very track. So he clearly gets on with the track. In fact, if you look at his stats from that week, he produced his best ever European Tour long game stats, third for total drive and third for ball striking. So it clearly suited his eye when he played here a couple of years ago. Early this season, six missed cuts on the trot, which is kind of what you expect. Then he led the Irish Open, you may remember, at the halfway point. Drifted away, finished ninth in the end, but that was a good positive step in decent company. 11th in Prague, 16th in Gothenburg, both with some decent long game performances. And when his long game's good, that's when he plays well. When his long game's off, forget it, he's missing lots of cuts. And I think right now, his long game's in a decent place. And going back to this, you know, he's going back to a track that he's clearly has performed well in terms of his tee to green game when he played it a couple of years ago. So yeah, I thought worth taking the chance, 150-1 on Lombard. So that's my five for my team this week. And just hope one of the boys at the very top of the market doesn't just walk it and we're just playing for a place.
If you were looking at one of those shorties, who would it be? Who's the one that's going to be in the final group?
Out of all of them, I think Thomas Peters is probably the most likely. I wonder about Xander. I wonder if Xander really has the desire to want to go and really attack an event. Clearly, he's well capable of winning it. He could absolutely walk it. Obviously, second at the East Lake.
He's Mini Brooks, though, isn't he? He's not going to win the BMW. He's not BMW. God, can you imagine the guys in Stuttgart? The Porsche European Open. Xander's not going to do that, is it? That's just not his character. He's clearly come across for some Euros and a bit of downtime. But, I don't see Xander winning it. Famous last words.
No.
Patrick Reed, he's still got a President's Cup spot to and he's performed well in Europe in the past. He takes the European Tour seriously, doesn't he?
Yeah. And, Casey, Tita Green, he should be absolutely spot on for this track this week. Whether he can produce the putts to warrant a price of circa 6-7-1, it just didn't excite me. So no, I'm happy to leave them all alone. If there was one, it probably would be Thomas Peters, who I think he's stepped up a gear again, and I think it will work well for him this week. But yeah, I think I'm quite happy to start a little
bit further down. Strokes going tee to green, last two events. Second, when he won in Czech. And last week was first. Third for a strokes gained approach. Sixth for strokes gained off the tee, which is going to unlock a lot of doors here, isn't it? His putting isn't. But is this going to be a pure putting contest?
No, not likely not so to be. Sure. I think it's more about controlled aggression. And, you know, as I say, if you were to hold me over a barrel, then that he would be the most likely at the top of the market that I'd back. But I haven't backed any of them. So if one of them wins, then so be it. And hopefully we can make up some decent money from the places, if so be it. If that's the way it goes, but fingers crossed they don't, and one of our boys gets over the line.
The other one I'm going to back is Arnoux.
Yeah.
Because he's playing some great stuff, isn't he? I know he's short in your mind. But that is the kind of price point that potentially wins around here, isn't it? The 40-1, 45-1. Where's Arnoux at the moment? He's sitting there, 35s is the best price for Unibet. He is due a big win soon.
You can't scrub him off. The only slight thing that puts me off is hasn't tended to be stringing consecutive weeks together. He tends to have a decent week and kind of then takes a week off and then he's back at it again. Another one who's going to be heavily supported is Matthias Schwab, who again I just looked at the price and thought I can't pull the trigger at that price, but he's. You know, he's got that combination of current form and course form, and he's going to be backed, but he's drifting down to the low 20s-1. So I can't do it. I can't pull the trigger at that price when I've got some players that I fancy a bit further down the list. So be it.
Have we got a top five finisher from last week at a ridiculously big price this week?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's going to work quite like that this week, but wasn't one who really stuck out who you could justify like that. I don't think. I don't know.
I can't see it in the betting.
No,
that player's not jumping out at me.
No, and I think last week at Crans, you could make more of a justification for a player like that or less of a justification, or there's a higher chance that they're gonna. not get the job done because they're going there with no course form. But this week you've got less course history to fall back on. You've got Lorenzo Gagli and Kali Samuja, both of them at three figure prizes, who finished in the playoff last week.
Yeah. Lorenzo. What's his game? How does he play his golf, Lorenzo Gagli?
Having watched it or not watched it last week because I was away, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. But
is he powerful? Or? I'm just looking. Oh yeah, 7th for strokes gained off the tee, 6th for strokes gained approach. So yeah, tee to green 10. I might put £2 on him as well, mate. Bearing in mind what we saw last week.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Gagli, and he's another one of these European Challenge players by the looks.
Yeah, and some of them could pop through and do something, I guess. Mm. But
they are producing a lot of good players, Italy, at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they've invested quite a bit, haven't they, as a country to.
It's try coming and get through.
The, yeah.
And Andrea Pavan being one that seems to be stepping up to the mark of late.
Yeah.
I might. There you go. I'm going to have £2 on him, and I'm going to have a few quid on Arnoux. Is it Arnoux?
Adrian Arnoux. Yeah, he will win. He will win something, but yeah.
And I might have a little win-only bet on Peters at 16s. I think those are the three I'm going to go for. But I do think Levy, of that was the one that I actually backed yesterday as well. Yeah. I think he's primed and ready.
Yeah, he loves this.
He's Levy. Exactly.
He does love this kind of track, so fingers crossed.
Appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Good luck, listeners. Hopefully we can get something over the line this week.
Absolutely. Be nice. That's podcast 94, done and dusted. We'll be back next week with 95, the Greenbrier, and also the KLM Open on the European Tour. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, of course, if you could give us a review, that would be absolutely fantastic. And also, if you're listening on YouTube, give us a like and a subscribe. See you next week.